Good morning. There's some opening words from Beatrix Potter. There's something delicious about writing the first words of a story. You never quite know where they'll take you. I'd like to welcome everyone. The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. That means our invitation is to all, and that all are welcome here regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or political persuasion. When I started writing this up last week, I started out with a topic of how appropriate it was to have something about the outdoors for the coming of spring. But yesterday, luckily it was not Sunday, or it would have been on Zoom, since in Madison we apparently did have 12 inches of heavy, wet snow. So it's still coming up to spring. And this time I do have a bona fide Unitarian to talk about. And once again, we all know this person, but not all of the story. So we noticed this last time I was here with Helen Keller, that everyone knows her as an inspirational figure, but didn't know she was quite a radical rabble-rouser. And others I've talked about, Lydia Maria Child didn't just write Over the River and Through the Woods. She was an abolitionist who wrote books on history, religion, sociology. Julia Ward Howe didn't just write The Battle Hymn of the Republic. She worked for women's suffrage and world peace, and so on. Especially with women, their legacy is often reduced to work they did in the arts or in the domestic sphere. For instance, writing for children, and Beatrix Potter is the same. For this talk, I mostly relied on two books. The scholarly one was where I got my title, Beatrix Potter, A Life in Nature by Linda Lear. This is very thorough. The other one is Becoming Beatrix by Amy M. O'Quinn. And this one seems to be written for an upper elementary or middle school audience, but I'd recommend it to anyone. After all, the Jeopardy champion Ken Jennings said he regularly studied up on nonfiction topics by reading books for young people. They have all the main facts without a lot of unnecessary details. And because of the era that Beatrix lived in, and because her family was, as you'll see, into photography, there are many photographs of her at all ages. There's a charming one on here from her childhood. And then Kathy brought in this book, which she says she got maybe at a free little library or some other place, Beatrix Potter's Gardening Life. It has many pictures, her drawings, some of her illustrated letters, and her drawings from gardens, pictures from the area. Her home can still be visited today. So people could look at this. Kathy said she would put that in the library. Thank you. It's lovely. As we saw in our story, Beatrix was born in 1866 in London to a well-off family. Their roots were in Northern England, and their fortune came from several generations of textile manufacturing, so there was an arts component. She was largely raised by nannies, as was the custom. They took daily walks in a nearby park, where the young child delighted in animals and plants, and very early she began to draw them. Beatrix enjoyed books, especially the illustrations by artists such as Kate Greenaway and John Tenniel, who's the person who illustrated the original Alice in Wonderland. You might have seen those. Beatrix always loved the outdoors. She enjoyed trips to her grandparents' home out of town, and she loved the summers that they spent in Scotland. Her parents rarely allowed Beatrix to play with other children, so she was delighted to welcome a baby brother, Bertram, when she was six. And they became very close. The Potter family was very active in the Unitarian Church, and they were close friends of the Unitarian minister, William Gaskell, and his wife, Elizabeth. Elizabeth is the author of books such as Cranford, North and South, and Wives and Daughters. And both of the Gaskells were very involved in social reform with other Unitarians. The Potters were also friends of the Pre-Raphaelite painter, John Millay. Beatrix's father, Rupert, and soon Beatrix herself would assist Millay by taking photographs from nature, which he would use for his paintings. This was very early for a family to have a camera, and especially for one to be entrusted to a child, but apparently Beatrix was quite good with this. Rupert and Helen, Beatrix's parents, valued art. They themselves carried sketchbooks when they went out walking in the countryside. When they saw that their young daughter had a talent for it, they encouraged her. Both Beatrix and Bertram were fascinated by all kinds of creatures. As we saw, they had many pets. They brought home rabbits, turtles, frogs, salamanders, birds, snails, bats, and so on. When the animals died, they turned to scientific interests, boiled the corpses, drew the skeletons, labeled and preserved the bones. So this was an interesting mix of sentiment and science. Unitarians were a minority, which limited the Potter's social circle. Like many of the women I've studied, Beatrix seemed to outgrow even the relatively liberal Unitarian church. At 18, she wrote, "All outward forms of religion are almost useless and are the cause of endless strife. What do creeds matter? What possible difference does it make to anyone today whether the doctrine of the resurrection is correct or the miracles? They don't happen nowadays, but very queer things do that concern us much more. That is, there are many things we should be paying more attention to today. Believe there is a great power silently working all things for good. Behave yourself and never mind the rest." For Beatrix, nature was always her true temple. And in later life, when she lived in a rather remote area, she probably did not attend any churches because there was unlikely to be a Unitarian church there, and she was busy on her farm. Excuse me. So around the same time of age of 18, Beatrix wrote, "Thank goodness my education was neglected. I was never sent to school. It would have rubbed off some of the originality. I have always found my own pleasure in nature and books." So she was certainly well-read. She had tutors, but she never went away to school. From her tutors, she learned French, German, drawing. But as we heard, when her parents sent her to expensive painting lessons around the age of 13, she found them a waste of time. They were based on copying old masters, and they dictated certain styles of painting, which were not those of Beatrix. On the other hand, she was very impressed by the paintings of John Turner, which she saw exhibited when she was 16. She described her own artistic urge as the irresistible desire to copy any beautiful object which strikes the eye. "I cannot rest. I must draw. And not only beautiful objects," she wrote. "I caught myself in the backyard making a careful and admiring copy of the swill bucket, and the laugh it gave brought me round." Beatrix was often alone since her brother was away at school. Her mother seems to have been rather cold and critical, her father often occupied, but she found that drawing always improved her mood. And as a child, she did suffer from some undiagnosed illness, as we saw in the story. When she recovered, Beatrix looked for new ways to occupy her time. She wanted to earn a little of her own money for independence. She drew greeting cards and also used her brother's microscope to make scientific illustrations. Some of the cards were actually sold to a printer. Bertram delivered them, so they assumed he was the artist. Beatrix became especially fascinated by mushrooms and other fungi, both as subjects for art and from scientific curiosity. She even came up with a theory about the relationships between fungi and mold. She was unable to get naturalists or the Royal Society to even speak with her, a young woman, or take her seriously. However, her theory was later proved correct. In addition, some of her illustrations are still used today in the study of mushrooms and other plants. Beatrix had stayed in touch with her last governess, who had been only a few years older than herself, and was now married with small children. And as we saw, when he was ill, Beatrix sent a picture letter to young Noel to cheer him up. It started, "I shall tell you a story about four little rabbits whose names were Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter." And Peter was the name of an actual rabbit pet she had had. As always, her rabbits were drawn in a realistic way, right? They are not drawn like cartoons, but they did have, for instance, elements of clothing, right? Later, she sent additional stories featuring other animals to the children of several friends. Her former governess and friend suggested they be published, and Beatrix began to pursue this. She felt strongly they should be in a small format, the little books for little hands. After some unsatisfactory discussions with publishers, Beatrix had The Tale of Peter Rabbit published privately for her family and friends. Then one of the publishers, Frederick Ward and Company, wrote back expressing interest, and Beatrix began to work with the son of the family business, Norman Warren. After some negotiation about how many illustrations would be in color and how to keep the price down for both printing and purchasers, the first printing of Peter Rabbit of 8,000 copies sold out before publication. It was reprinted numerous times. Beatrix credited its success to the fact that the story was written for a real child and based on a real rabbit, and because she wrote it to please herself. She said, "I think I write carefully because I enjoy my writing and enjoy taking pains over it. I have always disliked writing to order. I write to please myself." And she also said she remembered much from her childhood. She said she remembered learning to walk, for instance, and many things from early childhood. Now, just to establish our timeline here, at the time that Peter Rabbit was published, Beatrix was 36 years old. She had never taken much part in society, and her parents didn't seem eager to marry her off, which would have been common at the time. Meanwhile, Beatrix became involved in her other lifelong interest, the preservation of natural spaces. A new organization arose in 1895, the National Trust. This was a public ownership of places of, quote, historic interest or natural beauty. And any of you who have traveled in Britain have undoubtedly visited tourist sites maintained by the National Trust. But I didn't realize besides historic sites, they have a function similar to the Nature Conservancy or American National Parks. Beatrix became one of the first life members of the organization. After the great success of Peter Rabbit, Beatrix created many other stories involving squirrels, frogs, foxes, hedgehogs, and more. She was immediately aware of the possibilities for merchandising. Vendors had already begun to make stuffed toys and other items that were supposed to represent Peter Rabbit, and she was unimpressed with their quality. She herself designed and patented a stuffed toy, china figurines, wallpaper, board games, and later a painting book. On the other hand, Warren and Company had failed to secure the copyright in the United States, where pirated editions and sequels were being issued freely. Beatrix continued to work with Warren and Company. She became a friend of the family, and especially of Norman. Their correspondence became warmer, and in 1905, he asked her to marry him. Although Beatrix was now 39 years old, her parents were furious. A publisher was too low in social standing. They also were accustomed to having Beatrix around to take care of their every need. Beatrix, having discovered love so late in life, found the strength to stand up to her parents, but she agreed not to announce the engagement publicly. An ironic twist to this is that Beatrix's brother Bertrand had secretly married a merchant's daughter 3 years before. They lived near the Scottish border, and his parents had no idea. He had known that his parents wouldn't approve. Shortly after accepting the proposal, Beatrix went on a holiday to Wales, and only 5 days later, Norman became ill. The family wrote asking Beatrix to visit, but he declined so rapidly and died at home just 1 month after the proposal that he never saw Beatrix again. She had not had time to get there. Apparently, the illness was lymphatic leukemia. We can only imagine how crushing this was to Beatrix, who had written in her diary that her story finally had a happy ending. She couldn't even grieve openly because no one outside the family knew of the engagement. As always, she found solace in nature and art. Shortly afterwards, Beatrix had the chance to purchase her own farm, Hilltop Farm, in the northern area where her family had roots. This was a working farm of 34 acres with a farmhouse, outbuildings, and an orchard. She asked the current tenant farmer to stay on as manager, but she took on eagerly the project of learning all about the crops, animals, and land maintenance. She developed a special interest in the Herdwick breed of sheep, which were perfectly adapted for that climate and landscape. And she won many prizes with them. Beatrix had some money from family inheritance and from her books. Her parents weren't happy about her leaving them alone in London, but she had finally decided to live her own life, and she did frequently go back to visit them. She continued to publish what she called her little books, Jemima Pell Duck, Jeremy Frog, Tom Kitten, Mrs. Tiggywinkle, and so on. Beatrix took an active part in opposing the construction of an airplane factory in the area. which the local people felt would really destroy its character. She expanded her holdings over the years. She found out that she had vastly overpaid for her original farm, so she started to work with a local solicitor who could help her. His name was William Helis. As with Norman Warren, she got to know William over time. William respected this independent, now 46-year-old woman, a famous author, and a dedicated farm woman, and he eventually proposed marriage. Unlike many men of the time, he had no objections to her unusual life. But Beatrix's parents again disapproved. Marry a country solicitor? Helen and Rupert Potter, the parents, were now around 80 years old. Beatrix was torn. Her cousin advised her to go ahead and just elope without telling her family. The deciding voice turned out to be Brother Bertrand. He visited his parents and confessed that he had been happily married for 11 years. He felt guilty that he hadn't spoken up for Beatrix when she wanted to marry Norman Warren, and now he insisted that she had the right to decide her own life and happiness. The parents came around enough to find William likable, so Beatrix and William married in London in October 1913, but then they did move back to the country, of course, and she insisted on being called Mrs. Helis locally, though of course her name as an author never changed. As you can imagine, World War I touched everyone in England. Although Bertram Potter and William Helis both avoided the draft because of their age and various health conditions, farmhands were gone. Like many at the time, Beatrix took on a, quote, land girl, in this case a 40-year-old woman, Eleanor Louisa Choice, who called herself Louie. They became good friends. Beatrix knew better than most that a woman could handle almost any farm chore or emergency. On the home front, though, there were very different dangers. Beatrix noticed that her publishers, Warren and Company, hadn't been sending royalties for some time. In 1917, Harold Warren, a brother of Norman and current manager of the company, was arrested for forging bank certificates and embezzling funds from the company. He was sentenced to 18 months in jail. Fortunately for Beatrix, she had retained the copyrights to her drawings and stories, so that was not affected. But she felt great loyalty to this publishing company because of her love for Norman and indeed the whole family. She also appreciated that they had taken a chance on her as an unknown author. She issued a series of prints and painting books whose proceeds went to the company. They probably wouldn't have survived without her. Now, Beatrix's father died before World War I and her mother somewhat after it. These were expected. A much greater shock was the sudden death of her dear brother Bertram of a brain aneurysm in 1917 at the age of 46. Now, you'll remember how the war was followed by the devastating influenza epidemic. Then, as now, rural residents had much less access to health care than those in towns. There was a feature on PBS News this week about Americans in rural areas and how difficult it is to have health care. Well, Beatrix was a leading figure in a drive to establish a traveling district nurse. She also became enthusiastically involved in the Girl Guides, that is equivalent of Scouts, stating she wished it had existed when she was young. Their emphasis on independence and enjoying the natural world especially appealed to her. She encouraged troops to camp on her land, gave away her books as prizes, and befriended numerous individual girls and encouraged them in careers. As someone who had been ill as a child, she became a supporter of the Invalid Child's Aid Association, and she allowed that organization to use a Peter Rabbit design for free on a special fundraising card. She also continued to acquire farmland, parks, and woodland, all of which she planned to bequeath to the National Trust on her death. All these charitable acts were done very quietly, no fanfare. Beatrix continued to produce books which often showed scenes of village life. She even included herself in a couple of stories involving sheep and dogs. On one of the farms she purchased, she refurbished a house and turned it into a tea room and hired a woman to manage it. Beatrix lived long enough to see the horrors of a second war. Once, an entire printing of Peter Rabbit was destroyed by a bomb which hit the bookbinders. Luckily, the originals were elsewhere. After that, Beatrix decided it would be safest to keep all her original illustrations and manuscripts with her in the rural North. Beatrix died in 1943 at the age of 77. Per her wishes, her ashes were scattered on her beloved hilltop farm, as were those of her husband William 18 months later. The shepherd who did this followed her instructions to keep the location secret and only divulged it to his sons late in his own life. The death notice specifically requested no mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, no calls, no letters, and she was listed under her married name of Helis. On her death, Beatrix bequeathed to the National Trust 15 farms with all their buildings, 4,000 acres of land, and most of her manuscripts and illustrations. According to her wishes, Hilltop Farm itself was preserved as a memorial, which you can visit today. Like many women I've learned about, Beatrix chafed at the restrictions for women in her era. She could have certainly have been a scientific illustrator. She could have been a botanist, zoologist, ecologist, or agronomist. Indeed, she practiced all these professions on her own. Well, while she couldn't be a professional scientific illustrator, she brought the same level of detail to all her work. Some who worked with children resented it. For instance, Louisa May Alcott said she only wrote children's books for the money, but Beatrix loved writing and illustrating those little books. She was able to combine her scientific and artistic love with something that made her quite a bit of money and allowed her to live in the beautiful countryside. She was born in 1866. So that was an era of quite a lot of technological change. Oh, but she refused to get electricity in her farmhouses. She did put some in the barn because she said she thought the cows might like it. It probably made it easier for people to work in the barn. But in her farmhouses, she refused to have electricity and used probably kerosene lighting and so on. Yeah, and she was out all day working on the farm with the shepherds and the farm managers and so on, and was very interested in learning all about everything that they did. Some automobiles also came in, and at first she was not happy about them, but she saw how useful they were, and so they actually did own two cars. She decided she was too old to learn to drive, but her husband drove, or a farmhand would drive her to go to town or whatever. This would have been in the 20s, 30s, and so on. That was almost a necessity. Yeah, and again, she put it in the barn, so she was more of a personal preference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like they didn't feel that other children were fit for her to play with, for instance, when she was young, and that they were not, and that is interesting, they were not interested in society. They stuck to their Unitarian group, which was small. They did say that it was not that unusual for parents to have a lot of say, even when their daughters were 30, 40 years old. I don't think they ever threatened to, to disinherit her or anything, but she was, in many ways, the only child because she was there first, and then her brother being away so much at school, and once he got out of school, lived away from home, and she was the one doing everything for them. But it seems quite outrageous. She was ready to defy them both times, though, and actually marry someone they didn't approve of. And it seems that she especially did not have a good relationship with her mother, but still felt loyalty. I wasn't aware, because I heard another talk at Prairie Unitarian years ago about Beatrix Potter, that I knew more about her land side and her scientific side, but most people are not aware of it. So it's nice to find someone who was able to use their skills to actually make a living and enjoy the life that they had.